Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning, Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse in your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Thank you. Thank you for listening to and for supporting the Brain Massage Show. We are dedicated to presenting a biblical perspective on news important to God-fearing patriots. And I'm glad you're there. Taking the full armor of God, we wade into the thick of the battle, swinging the sword of the Spirit, truth, thrusting it into the belly of that lying dragon, the father of the lie, and engaging the forces of darkness by turning on the strong light of God's truth, God's word. You know, we try to do that with a mixture of humor, serious thought, incisive logic, wit, and wisdom, all the while offering powerful, enlightening insights along the way. Well, now we begin to wrap up another year. Old Jack Frost is nipping at our noses. And if we survive Black Friday and Cyber Monday, we'll begin preparing in earnest for Christmas and New Year's celebrations and getting ready to launch a new year. The picture of our future as cast by the MSM is bleak indeed, worrisome, even dangerous. But apparently at least most Americans have learned that Marxist socialist media, MSM, is the propaganda organ of fascist Nazi-serving Soros and his ilk, and now the people are ignoring them even more than ever before. I mean, it's true that people whose view of America comes from the communist propaganda indoctrination camps called public education and whose news and views come from the anti-American globalist agenda-driven media, America's in grave danger of, well, becoming the America of our founders. Or at least turning dramatically back into that direction. All right, to begin, don't believe them when they say Trump has backed off so many of his promises. Don't let the forked tongue of that snake slither into your ear, hissing his lies into your mind. You know, we can see in front of us Team Trump is assembling, and we know where these people stand because they've stood there for so many years and have been consistent in their conservative convictions. And the people he's choosing tells you everything you might want to know about the direction he's headed. And so far, it's due conservative. And of course, it remains to be seen how the war will play out. But it's looking good for the moment, for Team America as founded. And one sure sign of that is the weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth that we're watching and hearing from the enemies of America as founded. You know who I mean, the ones who think America needs to be transformed into some European socialist-like state with a South American democratic dictatorship twist taking point on advancing the globalist agenda. And I took a little bit of heat for following up on the elections with a call to arms and a warning that we have not won yet. I hold to my ground on that one. All we won so far is a place in the battlefield. And although we've certainly secured better field position than we had before, the war is far from over. And as a matter of fact, as many are now saying, the battle has just begun. So here I am on this Thanksgiving holiday, sitting at my desk enjoying intermittent bites of the Dove's most excellent pumpkin pie with a cup of Scheidbach strength espresso, rejoicing in the goodness of God and the truth that his mercy endureth forever, and talking to my many thousands of friends for liberty and examining the battlefield for freedom. My dear friends, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Now we've got some serious enemy counterattack maneuvering from the enemies of liberty and their reaction to the election. The MSM is in an all-out assault mode trying to blast Trump before he even gets out of the gate to begin his first term. First, they are doing all they can to explain away the Trump victory. Putin did it. Yeah. Russian Putin, not Rasputin. But anyway, Russian propaganda effort helped spread fake news during election, experts say, quote unquote, and that from the Washington Post. Well, we can all trust that source, right? And it's trending at the top of their the most read list. And of course, the most read WAPO article might mean 10,000 or more people read it. All right. And I'm one of them for research purposes. So, Russia put out fake news. That's the MSM speciality. You know, what they're resenting the competition. And by the way, it's a long tradition in America's mainstream media, with deep roots all the way back into the effort to transform America in the early days of FDR. For example, one of New York Times reporters, Walter Durante, helped cover up Stalin's forced starvation of over 1.5 million people in Ukraine between 1932 and 33. Hey, you know, you got to protect one of FDR's buds. Well, Stalin, you know what I mean? It was all for a good cause, you know. Durante's, quote, fake news helped sell communism to impressionable people around the world and change the course of history, end quote. So, while Stalin was committing genocide against Ukrainians, FDR was shaking his hand, patting him on the back, and, you know, developing a relationship with his murdering friend, helping Stalin get accepted in the world community, recognizing his communist regime, getting Stalin into the League of Nations, and establishing trade deals with Stalin's Russia, knowing all along about the forced starvation against Ukrainians as a reprisal against them for their refusal to accept Stalin's forced collectivization of their farms. You know, FDR was working on his own collectivization program over here. And the New York Times was there to help FDR facilitate the lie and the early beginnings of the transformation of America. But the New York Times has a history of playing ball, you know, with dictators in order to gain access. Yeah, globalists like to reward those who support the agenda. And so Durante was recognized with a Pulitzer Prize for his services rendered. And CNN, with their massive cover-up of Hussein's atrocities in Iraq leading up to the war. Don't forget that. And by the way, do they bother denying that they covered up factual stories of Hussein's brutality? No, they don't even bother denying it, man. They explain it like this. It was necessary in order to have access. In other words, if you report what the dictator monsters want you to report, well, then they'll give you access. So, yeah, right? What do you expect? Come on. And as for fake news stories, what about New York Magazine's story that launched the movie Saturday Night Fever? Yeah, the author presented the story in the New York Magazine as a true story and later admitted that he made it all up. The fake news story by Washington Post about an 8-year-old heroin addict, remember that one by Janet Cook? Made America look pretty bad. Put out a bad taste for capitalist societies and the capitalist pigs, you know. And so, of course, it had to be awarded the Pulitzer Prize. But it turns out the whole thing was a lie. Remember when Dateline NBC rigged a truck to explode? A lie. A fake story. They staged the crash. Remember that? And of course, they deeply regretted lying, or shall I say getting caught in their lies. So they made a new policy. And their new policy was that they wouldn't lie anymore. But hey, none of this is about tampering with an election. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Hey, what about Rathergate? How about Rathergate? Rather tried to use a story he knew to be false about G.W. Bush in order to, quote, tamper with the election, end quote. They falsified documents and fabricated a story that was a total lie in order to embarrass G.W. and throw the election against him. But like the infamous Watergate, Rathergate actually came down to an issue of cover-up. You know, they went insane trying to cover up this whole thing. And that's really what did him in. One of the most famous of the lines that came out during that one is this, that Rather's story was, quote, fake but accurate, end quote. In other words, a lie but true. Then the effort on the part of the MSM to disparage the Tea Party movement, I mean, it's legendary now with the lies. I mean, it's multiple occasions of this. You know, the manufacture of stories to support a specific bias or to promote a specific outcome in an election reached new levels. One of many examples, the MSNBC reporter announcing, quote, white people showing up with guns, end quote, showing a picture that was supposed to prove it, saying that here they are, white people are angry about a black man being president, then showing a picture of what was supposed to be a white man coming to some of these rallies with a gun. But it turned out that the picture was of a black man with a gun. Besides that, Barack would not have become president unless a large number of white people voted for him. Hey, you've heard me say it many times. The one thing I liked about Obama was that he was black. Well, at least half black, anyway. Remember the edited 911 call of George Zimmerman? Lies, lies, these liars. That's what we've come to expect from the MSM, the Marxist Socialist Media, the Rolling Stone rape hoax. It goes on and on. The fake news. Yeah, look, the story about a professor creating an authoritative list of fake news websites, you know, widely reported across the mainstream media. Did you know that that itself was a fake story? Made up. The MSM have led the way in manufactured news and manipulating perception to promote an agenda. And they are whining about Russia gaming them? Getting the best of them at their own game? A game, by the way, they learned from Russian propagandists as far back as Stalin. Okay. I think we've learned not to take the MSM any more seriously than we take the Inquirer these days. You know, with all the reports of Elvis sightings, and yeah, you get the idea. My point? Friend, don't let the MSM fool you. It will seem odd to some, perhaps, that the brain masseur is not jumping all over these stories coming out alleging that Trump is reneging on his talk about restoring justice for all, including Hillary, that he won't prosecute and all that. Of course, he's not supposed to do that anyway. That's the job of the Department of Justice. Anyway, moving forward with his temporary ban on Muslim immigration and other key points of his campaign promises as vindication of all of those concerns I've expressed over and over again about the dealing Donald, you know. Well, my friend, listen. I don't want to be right about those things, and I hope I'm wrong, but listen. I sure don't run with stories because they come from the mainstream media. Excuse me? And I don't run with stories just because they vindicate me. Nor do I avoid stories that contradict my expectations or predictions and stuff like that. Look, I'll get into that some more later. But right now, look, I don't believe the stories coming from the MSM because they're not coming from Trump's mouth. They're filtered through the biased MSM. I don't trust those folks. I'm hoping for better from Trump. I'm hoping he will truly be the non-political president. Now, of course, his campaign was almost as much political as usual as you can get. Well, his politics and personal destruction, all that junk, I don't want to revisit that right now. But with all my heart, I hope Trump keeps the promises that he has made to us. And from what I'm seeing and from what I'm actually hearing from Trump, it looks to me like he's pursuing the agenda he laid out for us during the campaign. Watch and pray, my friends, until you see Trump do something or you hear it from his own mouth with your own ears. Don't believe it. You cannot trust those people. All right, hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
If you want to help us expand the reach of this broadcast, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and click on the donate button or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind man's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. And I'm enjoying some of Dove's wonderful pumpkin pie, a family recipe that's been passed down some generations, some eggnog, some excellent Scheibach strength espresso, just having a wonderful time enjoying my Thanksgiving with my family and enjoying this time with you. In the last segment, I said the battle for the soul of America has only just begun. Actually, it's been going on for a while now, but we've been mostly retreating, you know, until this election at least. And the conservative surge is encouraging. Let's keep it going. However, the enemy of liberty is not going to simply sit down and quit or just walk away. They're going to scream, cry, and whine and all that. But make no mistake about it, the leaders of the effort to turn America into a European socialist state with a twist of South American democratic dictatorship, making America a lackey for the one-worlders, you know, a la Soros et al., these people are not going to give up. They're not going to walk away. They're going to retaliate from every angle they can. They're doing that, as I mentioned in my first segment. They're trying to say Trump won because of fake news disseminated by Russia into our conservative media outlets. And so they're saying Clinton won the popular vote. And so she's the people's president, you see. Trump, well, he's the special interest president, but Hillary, she's the people's president because she won the popular vote. You see what I mean? How they, yeah, these people are unreal. That the electors of the Electoral College, therefore, should give their vote to the one who won the popular vote. For the last, I guess, it's been about four elections or more, really. This business of bashing the Electoral College or challenging it has come up. If we're not careful, we're going to wind up losing our republic altogether. And we're going to become what Obama attempted to make us, a democratic dictatorship. Inside alert, Miss Sullivan, inside incoming. Hey, lose the Electoral College, lose your republic. Lose the rule of law and take on the rule of the mob, the tyranny of the mob. And that's what the Dems are up to. They're promoting the tyranny of the mob. You can see them doing it right in front of your eyes. They're agitating the mob mentality. You send out the mob to protest, agitate them to shoot police, the uprising of the proletariat to overthrow the bourgeois. That's exactly what's going on here, my friend. The Democrats don't listen. I hope you're seeing this. The Democrats are agitating an uprising of the disaffected, and their greatest fear is Trump's success because Obama has done all he can to keep the so-called underclass under, to keep them unhappy, boiling under the surface, sometimes boiling over. His policies and his actions are obviously intentional to keep them hungry and make them angry. That's when a mob is most useful, when they're hungry and angry. If they get happy and active and productive, well, then their attention gets focused on productive things like education, jobs, and pursuing their piece of the American dream. They get a taste of strong and sustained economic growth where the rising tide starts actually lifting up their ship too, and they begin getting off the dole and on their own and feeling a sense of accomplishment and independence. That will absolutely destroy the Democratic Party. That's when the rabble-rousers begin to become irritated and concerned. They start seeing their counter-revolution against the original revolution dissipating as biblical capitalism begins to produce jobs and economic promise and hope. So we're reading headlines like, you know, how long before the white working class realizes Trump was just scamming them? Quote, unquote. Yeah. And then there's this, the effort to steal the election from Trump and give it to Hillary. She already managed to steal the nomination from Bernie. Now she, or her minions, will try to steal the election from Trump. And in doing so, further their real agenda, which is to move this nation off of a nation of laws and onto a nation of popular rule. You know, from the rule of law to the rule of the mob. And that's what's coming down, folks. Watch and pray. Here's another MSM headline that tips their hand. Quote, the Constitution lets the Electoral College choose the winner. They should choose Clinton, end quote. And that from the Washington Post, euphemistically called WAPO. On the opinions page, Nikki Kahn of WAPO begins by tipping her hat to the Electoral College system. Well, that's a bit different from the usual rant along these lines. Typically, the argument is that it's not fair that someone can win the popular vote and yet lose the Electoral College vote, allowing someone to become president who actually did not win the greatest number of votes cast by the people. That's usually what the whining and the droning on and on is saying. There are some who are using that argument, of course, so I will address that, but Nikki's actually coming at it from a new angle. She likes the Electoral College. It was set up as a check on the national election results so that, theoretically, if the electors together believe they have just cause, they can overturn the national election results and vote in another candidate, even someone who did not run for election, as I understand it. Although I think Nikki would agree that would certainly be considered unfair. Forget about it being unjust. Anyway, let's look briefly at the Electoral College. A more thorough examination of this will be presented in my Issachar Report Sunday night when we seek to understand it from a biblical point of view. First, we are not a democracy. The core idea of a democracy is majority rule. But the core idea at the center of our government system, a republic, is the law rules. Government by law and government under law. This is the reason that when the majority of people in this country were comfortable ignoring the injustices perpetrated upon Black Americans, well, the law prevailed over the majority, and we eliminated those Jim Crow laws, which were used to enforce racial segregation in the South. Democrats, by the way, did that. Now, those who argue this nation is a democracy must believe that Jim Crow laws were just and legal and right, because, you see, the majority wanted segregation. But we're not a democracy, and the majority does not rule. Law does. On the other hand, We do use a process to elect our leaders that enforce our laws that does involve some elements of democracy. And this is where people get confused. In a direct democracy, the individual who gets the most votes receives the appointment by the people to rule. The ruler then, usually, goes about to set up his own government, and he governs according to the mandate that's given to him, that's presumed to have been given to him or to her during the popular election. If the people don't like his rule, well, they vote him or her out the next time they get a chance. That is, unless the democratic ruler uses his power to establish himself as dictator, which is what usually occurs in a direct democracy, and which is what was happening there in Egypt before that Muslim Brotherhood lackey of Obama was booted out. Anyway, in our system, we use a hybrid of democratic elements and aristocratic elements to balance it all out. Okay, listen, you'll understand something. It'll help you. In an aristocracy, certain persons holding title and land, usually inherited, decide who will be king or who will rule. Now, we don't like a direct democracy for reasons I've already pointed out. Sometimes there's no protection for the minority from the tyranny of the majority in that system. You know, minorities' rights may be unjustly abridged or even totally violated, but in an aristocracy, where a special elite group decides who will rule, well, that takes away representation from the common people. It eliminates them from the process and creates a situation where the aristocracy can become tyrants and trample upon the rights of the common people. So in our system, we have created a sort of hybrid in which each state is afforded a number of electors that is based on that state's number of representatives in the Congress. And by Congress, I mean both houses, the House of Representatives and the House of the Senate. A census is taken, I think every 10 years or so, or 20 years, I forget now, I think it's every 10 years, and each state gets a certain number of seats in the Congress based on their population, and every state gets two senators. It comes out to something like 700,000 people for each congressional seat in the House of Representatives. And California is by far the most populated state, and so it holds 53 congressional seats, and with its two senators, it has a total of 55 electors. You see how that works? Now, if you're paying attention, you already see why a popular vote scenario would be unfair. For example, let's think about New Yorkers. New York's a very populated state, but they only have 29 electors. You see, based on their population. So relative to California, they're only about half the size of California. It would be impossible for New York to compete with the population of California. To illustrate, if California and New York were the only two states at play here, then no one would bother campaigning in New York because the only people that would matter in any election would be the people in California. But wait a minute. That isn't solved by going to an electoral system. Why? Because, well, California has 55 electoral votes while New York has only 29. But we don't have only two states. We have 50 states. And so the total number of electoral votes is spread out more. And the total number is 538. And that would be one electoral college vote for each House representative and senator from each state, all totaled together. It requires a majority of these electors to become president. And that means that the magic number is 270, as you know, because 269 would be half of 538. You need a majority of 270. And you okay with this so far? Numbers sometimes get people a little bit lost when you're trying to talk them, but they need a chalkboard almost, but you get the idea. Each state has two senators and a number of congressional seats in the House determined by their population. So more populated states have more representation in Congress. But that seems fair since there are more people in those states. So they're trying to balance it all out. Now, each state gets assigned a number of electors that is equal to their number of congressional seats, including their representatives and senators together. So, which candidate gets to have the electors? Now, that's determined by popular vote within each state. That's the Democratic part of this. The people vote. And whichever candidate gets the most votes, they get to have the electors for that state assigned to them. Now, some states are winner takes all. Other states assign electors according to the popular vote of each congressional district in that state. In those states, a candidate can win the popular vote in, say, 10 of 27 congressional districts in that state. So in that case, he will get 10 electoral college votes, while the other candidate will get the 17. And you get the idea. When the national election is concluded, the votes are all added up, and the electoral college votes are assigned candidates based on the popular vote. But not the popular vote of the overall nation. No, the popular vote within each congressional district, and in some cases, as that adds up, for the overall state, as in California, which is a winner-takes-all state. Now, I really think California ought not to be a winner-take-all state, by the way. You know, in the primaries, it is different in California, but in the national election, California is a winner-takes-all. Now, this does not reflect, honestly, the great diversity of California on district levels. Now, California ought to portion out their electoral votes, and that would make it a much more serious player in the national elections. We might even get guys like Trump to visit the state during the campaign. What do you think? Now, it's just the assumption it's going to go Democrat, and that's not even right. But anyway, this allows the states with much less population to have some representation for their values and interests in government. Otherwise, my friend, there'd be no need for anyone to bother voting unless you lived in California, New York, and some of the other more densely populated states, you know, with high population centers like Chicago and so on. All the states in what is euphemistically called flyover country would be marginalized, forgotten about, trampled on. Their interests would be totally overlooked. Now, the Electoral College, however, is a sort of aristocracy, but of course a very limited form of that. First, most of the states require a pledge from the electors to vote according to their state's election results. Second, the prevailing party chooses electors in most states, and these are chosen for their faithfulness to their party. And so often, these are also pledged to vote according to the election results. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, according to the Constitution, the Electoral College is free to choose whomever they will. It is possible, although very unlikely and improbable, that the Electoral College could meet and decide to choose neither candidate that ran. So what happens if Hillary prevails in her scheme to intimidate the Electoral College to overthrow their state's election results in favor of the overall national election results? Or in other words, if the Electoral College buys into the argument that because Hillary won the popular vote nationwide, they should become what are called faithless voters, turn against their states, and vote for Hillary. Would that mean Hillary de facto becomes president? Not so fast. From William C. Kimberly, Deputy Director, FEC National Clearinghouse on Election Administration, quote, "As a final note, the Congress enacted in 1887 legislation that delegated to each state the final authority to determine the legality of its choice of electors and required a concurrent majority of both houses of Congress to reject any electoral vote. That legislation remains in effect to this day so that the events of 1876 will not repeat themselves. We won't go back into that history, but here's the point. What this means is that if Hillary does succeed at getting the Electoral College to turn against their state's election results and buy into the idea of a direct democracy, throwing away our rule of law in favor of rule by mob, well, the Congress could step in and overturn the Electoral College. And so we can breathe somewhat more easily through all of this, knowing that the Congress has a majority on our side. We hope. We trust. Now, certainly we are safe if they try to get Hillary in this way. But there is enough hatred for Trump out there. One wonders, you know, until the Electoral College votes, we need to be watching and praying. And even then, will the rhinos attempt a coup in the Congress to overturn the Electoral College votes? Good night. This is such a mess. But have no fear, the King of Kings reigns, and he who searches hearts knows, and will finally decide this thing. So far as I'm concerned, he has decided it, and he has given us Trump Pence. So don't let your heart be troubled. Trump has not reneged on any of his campaign promises yet, no matter what the MSM try to tell you, and the idea that Hillary will overturn the lawful national election results and move our country out from under a law with her and all her unlawful ways. Well, that seems very unlikely to succeed. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. Say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. Or go to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll find there a place to email to me, and I would love to hear from you. And I appreciate very much all the wishes for a happy Thanksgiving. And right back to you, my dear friends. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.